This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. It is the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, and two words, business time. Four consecutive draws for Brentford and four consecutive defeats for Swansea City mean that if those two drop any more points and Norwich City win any more games, then Daniel Farker and his team will be promoted from the Skybet Championship at the first time of asking. Meanwhile, in Skybet League One, Blackpool extended their unbeaten run to 13 matches to move into the playoff places. And in Skybet League Two, could Port Vale make a late dash for promotion? They've won their last five. It's the official EFL podcast. So as the Skybet Championship, League One and League Two head into the final month of the regular season, let's assess who, what, where, when, why. With a former striker who had two spells with Cardiff City and played for West Bromwich Albion, Norwich City, Derby County, Nottingham Forest and a game for Blackpool. Robbie Earnshaw, as I always like to remind you, is also the only player to have scored a hat-trick in the Premier League, all three EFL divisions, the League Cup, the FA Cup and at senior international level in his case for Wales. He's also the only EFL podcast pundit to usually broadcast from his own personal throne. But Robbie, you're not in it this evening. What's happened?
Do you know what? I feel disappointed that I'm not sitting in there now.
Mate, what can I say?
You'll have to bring me back on. And then I'll be in the throne. We'll have to get the video so the people can see it.
Exactly.
My favourite chair in the world. I love it.
I know. I didn't doubt it for a second. And it's twice as tall as you, if I may say so. Listen. I want to talk top of championship. We just have to marvel at Norwich, don't we? I mean, no home defeats now in 19, their best since the mid-1980s. 10 wins in the last 12 overall. 13 away wins, joint most in their history. Lost two of their first four, then 3 and 36. Only lost 11 of the last 84 championship games, if you include the season before last when they went up. I mean, they are just magnificent. They're like a machine, Robbie.
They are. And especially this year, every time I see them, I enjoy seeing them. I enjoy watching them play. They've got good individuals and they work well together as a team. It's funny because I think especially the last two times they've been in the championship, I look at them, they're in one of those positions, almost like West Brom were actually a few years ago, where they're too good for the championship, but they keep stumbling in the Premier League. You know, so they're just at that position. What they need is just to build. They just need a little bit of consistency. They've got a very good squad. I actually believe they're probably stronger now than they were a couple of years ago. And even in the Premier League, I think they'll be much more equipped. I mean, I see them as pretty much done. They're pretty much promoted. There's no way they could not get promoted right now. In the position that they're in. It's just whether they finish first or second. Most likely first.
I think what makes it all the more impressive as well is, don't forget, in the middle of those two seasons, they lost 27 games in the Premier League. So to pick up the pieces, to lose a couple of crucial young players, but it's their spine as well. You know, Timmy Krul obviously has made his way back into the Netherlands squad, the goalkeeper. I think Ben Gibson, who sadly misses the rest of the season injured, has been brilliant at the back. Skip on loan from Tottenham's been superb, and there we go, Pukki once again, hat-trick in the demolition of Huddersfield, and up to 25 goals so far this season as well. Just that's what it's all about, isn't it? A solid spine can often be the base upon which you work.
It really is. And especially in the championship, even more, because the amount of games, there's so many games, it's relentless, even more so this year. And then, what you do need is a very, very good spine, but you need somebody at the back, setting the standard, being solid, very good goalkeeper, cruel, experienced. He could easily play in the Premier League, but he's playing there at Norwich, doing very well. You need somebody who can make the difference in your games and somebody who can score goals for you. You get half a chance, those tight games, and you're playing Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday. They're tight, difficult, and somebody's just got that quality. And Pukki, for them just impresses me so much. He's actually such a huge player for them that they kept him. The biggest thing was keeping him because he did well in the Premier League. They could have easily lost him to somebody else. But I think the very, very good thing that they did is they kept the core of the team. Cantwell as well has done well, but they kept the core of the team, they kept the manager, and they kept the top players. Pukki is one of those, and he's such a good goal scorer. His movement is excellent. Buendia as well. Buendia, Cantwell, and Pukki. Those three just click. They click together, they understand each other, and individual quality, you know, always wins you. And the biggest thing with Norwich is the style that they play. The style that play makes a difference. So when, you know, the likes of, you know, Pukki's missing or somebody else is missing, they can still be able to find a way.
Worthy champions elect. Meanwhile, 8 points behind them, but 9 points clear of third. We have to take our hats off to Watford, don't we? I mean, listen, we criticise them for the constant changes in manager, you know. When Cisco Munoz came in, he's the fifth in a year, 13th since June of 2012. But since he was appointed and took over on Boxing Day, their points tally is only just behind Norwich City's. In fact, exactly the same over the last dozen games, 10 wins in the last 12, and looking pretty much nailed on as well for that second automatic promotion spot.
For me, it's going to be Norwich and Watford, for sure. Watford have had an impressive year. They started off strong. They had a little bit of a blip. It's going to happen, okay. It's the Championship. It's going to happen. And even with all the manager changes, even with the club changes, and the off the field stuff that sometimes can be upsetting for a team, they've still stayed strong, and they've been consistent enough that they've got enough wins. They've been consistent enough that even when the new manager came in a few months ago, results didn't change too much. They didn't drop off. There wasn't a sudden impact to what they were trying to do, is get back to the Premier League. And it will be. It's just, you know, I think Norwich are maybe too far ahead, too little games, but Watford have had an excellent year. And, you know, it's everybody else fighting for the playoffs.
The previous manager, Vladimir Ivic, I did meet him. He was a lovely man, but he was very stern-faced. And when you have a wide squad like Watford have got, I would have thought you would need somebody that could cope with a range of different personalities and know which ones need to be treated a bit more harshly and which ones need the little arm round the shoulder. And do you think that's been the gentle difference and the massaging of some of the big egos there?
That's one of the big things. If you're leading the group, leading the players, and everybody thinks, you know, the players, it's easy and they just say what you do, it doesn't happen that way. You have to go in and you have to be able to understand the different personalities, understand the dressing room, understand the people around the first team, and be able to make sure that everybody's moving in the same direction and in a good enough direction that it doesn't impact your club. And I think that's one of the things that it's kind of carried on. The consistency's carried on, and they've had some excellent results, beat some good teams along the way. There's been games there that if they lost, maybe it might have just, you know, just changed the rhythm of their season a little bit, but they've come through it, and I think they'll be up. They're a good enough squad, good enough team, and I think they're consistent enough. That's the key, consistency with Watford, you know, because they've got people that can make a difference, especially going forward.
For both of them, 10 wins out of 12. You must feel magnificent about yourself when you're involved with a team that are in that kind of form. It just must be the kind of utopia of what all footballers dream of, isn't it?
It is. It is. And it's, as you say that, it just takes me back to when I was at Nottingham Forest, 2011, I think it was. And we just felt like that. We went on a crazy run. I think it was something like 20 games or something, you know, unbeaten. We were crawling up the league through the first probably 3 or 4 months. and we ended up into the top three. And we didn't lose for such a long time, what felt like months. That it was funny because I remember going into training one Monday morning, and we didn't lose for so long. I couldn't remember when the last time we lost. And because that's the feeling that you want. That's the ultimate feeling in the championship. That's what you exactly what you want, and that's what we had at Forest. We went on and we lost in the playoffs actually to Swansea that year. But you get to a point where you almost feel you can't lose, and when you it's just like a rhythm. You get this rhythm where you're like, well, yeah, they're a good team that we're going to face this weekend, but we're most likely going to get a good result. You know, when you look at Watford and Norwich this year, I think they've just got enough points with so little to go to the end of the season that they'll be fine. The ones that you have to worry about is who ends up in the playoffs. And that's going to be the tricky, because that's tight.
It really is. I mean, in the playoff places at the moment, Brentford played 39, 70 points. Swansea played 39, 69. Barnsley played 40, 68. Reading played 40, 66. And then just outside the playoff places, Bournemouth played 39-65. Bournemouth have won the last three. I mean, it's difficult not to admire Barnsley. They have their critics for their style of play, but 10 wins in their last 13, Robbie. And if management is getting the best out of what you've got, then we should be full of praise for Valerie and Ishmael, shouldn't we? I mean, talk about punching above their weight.
Yeah. I mean, you especially if you look at kind of those first maybe 3 months of the year and what was going on there and where they were to where they are now, there's no way you would have had Barnsley in you know, fifth position, you know, with, what is it, six games to go. Credit to them. And the new manager's done an excellent job because he's actually turned things around. You know, they changed manager. They thought, okay, we need to do something a little bit different to the first few months. And that's what they've done. I mean, when you get win after win after win, and you change the club and the whole direction that the club's going in, and now you're looking at a possible chance to go to the Premier League. And you are Barnsley, you know, no disrespect, but you are Barnsley. You've got to be thrilled. I'm sure their fans are going to be feeling so, you know, in just jubilation right now, because what a great position to be in. And that good momentum, you know, if anybody's got that, it's Barnsley.
Meanwhile, at the bottom, from the bottom up, it's Wickham played 40, 33 points. Sheffield Wednesday played 39, 35 points. Rotherham played 36, 35 points. And just outside of the relegation places, Birmingham played 40, 42. Coventry played 39, 42. And then Huddersfield played 39, 43. Derby played 40. 43. I mean, couple of wins for Wickham consecutive after taking just eight from their first 38. The one I think everybody keeps looking at is Rotherham United, because they've got all these games in hand. But the problem is, Rob, they're not winning them. It's eight defeats in 10 for them. And I do notice now, with all the sort of COVID postponements that they've had, that they're now going to enter a realm of playing Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, two games in 48 hours to try and make up ground. Would you rather have the points on the board that Birmingham do, or would you rather have the games in hand?
It's funny because when you speak to, you know, people that, you know, that are fans and in a neutral position or they're fans of a certain club, and they always look at the games in hand and think, oh, we've got games in hand. It's brilliant. Listen, as a player, when you're in those positions, give me the points. Give me the points, please, because there is no guarantee for you. With your games in hand, you could have four or five games in hand. Doesn't matter. You give me the points, you can have the games in hand. That's what I always think, because there is no guarantee. And when you're in crunch time, especially, you know, the uniqueness maybe of this year where they could be faced with three games a week in such small, tight space of time, you give me the points any day and let everybody else worry about trying to get those points that we've already got.
Your Sky Bet Championship fixtures for the forthcoming weekend. Friday night, it is second place Watford against sixth place Reading. Swansea hope to pick up the pieces with a trip to Millwall in the early kickoff on Saturday. It's Barnsley entertaining Middlesbrough. Bournemouth are at home to Coventry City. Norwich could win promotion if they win at Derby. Swansea drop points at Millwall and Brentford drop points at Preston. Meanwhile, games affecting relegation: Huddersfield against Rotherham, QPR against Sheffield Wednesday, and Wickham against Luton. And I do just want to mention as well, Bristol City against Nottingham Forest. Obviously, we had the first female appointment to an EFL game as a referee in Rebecca Welsh. She took charge of the game on Easter Monday between Harrogate Town and Port Vale. And Bristol City Forest will see the Singh brothers. So that's Janelle Singh's sons. Janelle retired as a EFL referee back in 2008. But two brothers, Bups and Sonny Singh, will both be involved with the officials team between Bristol City and Nottingham Forest this coming weekend. Skipping into Sky Bet League One, Hull played 40, 76 points. Peterborough played 39, 73 points. Sunderland played 38, 71 points. Then a 7-point gap to Portsmouth, played 38-64. Then Blackpool played 37-63. Lincoln played 37-62. And then there's a gap of 3 points and the teams just outside the playoffs. So Charlton played 38-59. We'll hear from Nigel Adkins a little bit later, the new Charlton manager. Ipswich Town played 38-59. Then Gillingham played 40-58. And then two teams, Doncaster and Accrington, on 57 points. Donny have played 37 matches. Accrington have played 38. If you had to choose two out of three for the automatic promotion places, Robbie, who would you go for?
For sure, Hull. Peterborough, right now, they've got to be thinking, okay, we need to see this out. But I would probably go for Sunderland sneaking in.
Yeah, they're on a hell of a good run, aren't they? 9 wins in their last 12 for Sunderland. Papa John's Trophy winners as well, which gives that little bit of extra sparkle dust to the campaign under Lee Johnson.
So much focus and so many things happening at that football club with Sunderland. And obviously Lee Johnson goes in and managing to put them in a good position, because that is a club that needs to go up. And, you know, they're in good form. They're in a good position. And I can see them, you know, Peterborough, a good team, and they've been consistent as well this year, and they've done very, very well, especially at home. But I can see Sunderland sneaking in. I can see them coming through and putting themselves in that automatic position. It's going to be, I tell you, they've got a game in hand as well over Peterborough, so that helps them as well. But I think it's going to be a very, very tight finish, very tight finish. But, you know, and credit to Peterborough as well, because I think they've got a good year. And a good season. And listen, I can't see past Hull going up automatically. And it's going to be Peterborough or Sunderland, I think, that follows them in that automatic position.
Your key games from Sky Bet League One this coming weekend: Lincoln City against Blackpool is sixth, entertaining fifth. Hull visit Plymouth. It's resurgent Portsmouth at home to Burton. Sunderland entertain seventh place Charlton, and it's Swindon against Peterborough. Into Sky Bet League Two, and Cambridge still leading the way, played 40, 71 points. Cheltenham in second, played 39, 69. There's a 5-point gap now to Tranmere, played 39 games, 64 points, as have Bolton, who suffered their first defeat in 15 matches on Easter Monday. Also played 39, Morecambe with 63 points, and Forest Green played 39, 62 points in their case, and then Newport County in the final playoff place played 38. 8, 60 points. The fixtures for this coming weekend. So it's Bolton who actually lost at Newport the end of that magnificent 14-match unbeaten run at home to Harrogate. It's top against 8th. That's Cambridge against Exeter. Second place, Cheltenham at home to resurgent Leighton Orient. Port Vale have won their last 5. Entertain Morecambe, Scunthorpe against Tranmere, and Walsall against Forest Green Rovers. What does it feel like to be involved at this point in the season? A month of the regular season to go. Some teams in mid-table obscurity, but generally speaking, some still with hopes for promotion or some still with fears of relegation. What's kind of flooding through you? And are you mentally and physically fatigued, Robbie?
I think so, yeah. You're definitely fatigued because obviously last year was a little bit different, but normally you would be building from around the end of June, middle of June, and you're just going relentlessly until, you know, April coming up now, and you're then in a position where on one end you're thinking, let's get results. There's nothing to lose, you know, especially in and around, you know, 10th, 9th. And you're thinking, okay, we've got nothing to lose and let's finish the season strong and see what happens. But then you've got the likes of, you know, Newport desperate to go up, you know, Forest Green, Morecambe, Bolton, you know, huge club, desperate to go up. But tiredness is the biggest thing. And it is a big, big factor because you are relentlessly training, games, traveling, buses, nonstop, all the time.
I tell you what, however tired you are at this point in the season, if you win promotion, you can still manage a trademark somersault goal celebration, can't you? You'll always have one of those up your sleeve. You'll always be able to do the full double. Was it a double flip you used to do or a triple flip? I can never remember.
I've done a couple. Yeah, there's been a couple of times where I've done the double, but yeah, normally it's the one and then something else, a bit of a surprise afterwards, after the somersault normally. So
yeah, did you actually used to do them in training just to make sure you could still do them and get right over because you didn't want to make a pillock of yourself when you're out on the pitch? Or did you just do them completely spontaneously?
I never did them in training. So I always tell a story about my my last year of school. So I am just 15, just turning 16, and I go to Cardiff City to train. And not realizing I'm a 15-year-old and, you know, I've got a couple of training sessions with Cardiff. So I go down there, and the youth team manager, I didn't know the situation, but he's actually picking the last couple of spots to go into the youth team. And I'm 15, 16, and next year I'm thinking, okay, maybe I'll do my GCSEs and maybe go stay on in school. I don't know. Hopefully I can, you know, play football. And the training session, I did so well. And because the boys that I was training with were playing against me, so they see me do the somersault. So they were like, oh, do the somersault, you know, in training. So I did the somersault, and funnily enough, the manager was picking the last couple of spots for the youth team. Sorry, he loved it, and I actually got the last spot on the youth team, Cardiff City youth team, because I did so well. Maybe the somersaults as well, but okay. And managed to get into the youth team, and then 1 year later, I'm playing in the first team at Cardiff City. So I actually never did it in training when I was a pro. Funnily enough, so it's interesting. I didn't even realize that till you just said about it.
Wow, that's amazing. So you that little bit of notoriety put you on the map, as well as being a darned good footballer. Don't forget, when we get you on next time, you must be in the throne room. Pleasure as always, Robbie Earnshaw.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, great to speak to you as well. I'll definitely be in the throne next time.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Next Wednesday, the 14th of April, is the EFL's Day of Action, an annual initiative that's been taking place since 2016. It's organised by the EFL Trust, whose CEO, Mike Evans, joins us now. And I guess the first thing we need to do, Mike, is for those that don't know, just tell us a little bit about what the Day of Action actually is.
Okay, well, as you say, we've been running this event since 2016, and really it's just a way to shine a light on the incredible work that the EFL clubs are doing in the community 365 days of the year. We ask each club to just focus on maybe one area of work or one project, and try and put some media around it, do a really big push on social, and just try and bring that great work to the attention of the wider public, because I think, you know, in the past it's been referred to as one of the sort of biggest secrets in football, this great work that goes on behind the scenes. But I think we've really shifted the dial on that over the last few years with fantastic coverage from, you know, the main ITV, BBC, Sky, and a really broad reach through social media. And I think it's really helped to highlight this fantastic work to the wider public.
Well, I agree with you, but my ears pricked up when you said secret, because I have a lot of chats like this actually right around the world with sort of legacy projects and some of the other stuff that I'm involved with. And I still think that there is far too much below the surface and everybody needs to shout about it. Because, well, just give us a little flavour of a key example, a case study, or give us a few examples of the sort of people that your clubs are out there helping, Mike.
I mean, there's so many, and particularly during this last 12 months, which has obviously been very difficult for everybody. But one of our favourite case studies that we were highlighting in a session yesterday was Valiant Vera. You know, Vera, the 91-year-old Port Vale fan who's living at home, and was actually referred to the club's community trust through Stoke-on-Trent Council, so through the City Council. And this is what we're finding now, that local authorities are seeing the football clubs as the go-to organisations to support people who've got issues. You know, and Vera wasn't eating properly. And the Port Vale's Foundation just took her under their wing as part of the Tackling Loneliness project that we're running right across the country. Started supporting her with home visits, with food, putting her in touch with other fans, creating a real social network for her, and then future visits to her GP are reporting back, what have you done to her? You've transformed her. She's a different person. And at the other end of the age spectrum, we're doing a lot of work with schools. Obviously, everyone knows that schools have been in and out over the last 12 months. A lot of students have found that situation really difficult. So the clubs have come together in a lot of cases, provided electronic equipment so that people can study from home where the family might not have iPads and might not have devices. And then also supported schools who are dealing with children of key workers and maybe some more disadvantaged children, and actually providing support around lessons, PE, and generally just helping the national effort to get us through this COVID pandemic. So, loads of examples, and something that every single club has been involved in.
Not wishing to put you on the spot with this question, but historically, where did this connection with doing this community work come from with the EFL's clubs? Why has it become such an important plank of all clubs' existence to reach out to the local communities?
I mean, it depends how far you want to go back with the story, Clem, but, you know, the original community departments were set up by the PFA, the Professional Footballers Association. You know, Gordon Taylor, who's retiring this year, as many people will know, was an absolute pioneer of work and trying to get football clubs more connected to their communities. If you're as old as me, you'll remember where football was in the 80s, you know, with hooliganism, fences to keep fans off the pitch, talk from the government at the time of membership cards, you know, and things like family-friendly football clubs and providing these sorts of services were not something that football clubs were really about. And it started from a very small base with mainly ex-footballers, ex-players coming to the end of their careers. Again, in those days, you had players with very long associations, you know, with individual football clubs. And those guys became the first community officers, going out into schools and engaging with different sections of society. And it's really grown from there. with clubs seeing that they can do much more than just coach young people, but also, you know, using football as that hook to engage people in things like education, bringing different sections of the community together, and solving some of the issues that affect our communities. And it's just grown hugely over the past, 30, 40 years.
Thank you. Thank you for the clarity on behalf of myself. And I guess on behalf of our listeners as well, because I guess the community peg is one that's used a lot in times of difficulty for the clubs to say, look, this is a diverse range of geographical locations, from Sunderland and Carlisle in the north to Gillingham and Plymouth in the south, every type of community in between. And do you think sometimes it's just kind of chucked in the mix during coverage and people don't fully understand the sort of the network of people that are out there in the field helping the vulnerable, helping the needy?
Yeah, I think that's certainly true. And it isn't for a lack of effort, I think, on our part or the club's part. I think this work does definitely get publicised, but it's not necessarily the stories that the Nationals want to put on the back pages, or, you know, or use as clickbait on the websites to get people to, you know, to read articles. These are the good news stories that often don't get that traction, which is such a shame. But if fans are out there and wanting to research their own clubs, and check the club websites and the club social media, they will see dozens and dozens of fantastic examples of this work. And as I say, particularly through the last 12 months, I think where clubs' community schemes, we call them CCOs, club community organisations, they're all separate charities under the football club badge. But we've seen them pivot very quickly to move towards the services that communities have really needed. So, you know, delivering food parcels, supporting the elderly, as we mentioned, you know, the services that perhaps they weren't that involved in 12 months ago, they've managed to turn their hand to very quickly. You know, and the clubs have responded magnificently, using the stadiums as testing centres, vaccination centres, you know, depots for warehousing provisions. It's just been an incredible year to be involved, really.
Just a microcosm of the times there that we can get the word pivot into an EFL trust interview. It's a word none of us used a year ago, and now it's at the epicenter of our lives. Listen, it's all hands to the deck, isn't it, on the day of action itself. Everybody gets involved: owners, chairmen, directors, managers, players, right throughout the club. Everybody gets involved in getting up close and personal with these various projects.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be really interesting, because I think there's going to be a lot of innovation about the type of programmes that we're showcasing and the way that players are able to get involved. I mean, obviously, that game has also changed during the last year. I mean, in previous years, I've been fortunate enough to be at Luton Town for a disability football session. I was with Oldham Athletic at their food bank one year, and I was at Blackburn Rovers for a youth football tournament. So, you know, three sort of very different community angles that I've seen on Day of Action. We also, one year, were featured live on the Victoria Derbyshire show, and we're in the studio with some participants.
Brilliant.
Looking at a real range of programmes around mental health of young people. Bristol City comes to mind, a great programme that they were running with young people that was highlighted on TV. So that's what we'd love to be doing. But I've got the feeling that there's going to be a lot of obviously social distance filming and recording and broadcasting. But we're absolutely delighted that the main media channels will be covering us again.
Yeah, I mean, all those food parcels, all those articles of PPE, all those outgoing and incoming conversations with fans, helping people with prescriptions. I mean, again, just truly supporting the communities during this incredible last year we've all been involved with, despite, let's be perfectly honest, Mike, the hardships a lot of clubs are going through, because it has not been an easy time without, you know, key sources of revenue and motivation in having fans in stadiums and participating.
the pressure that clubs have been under to just play the games, you know, every obstacle they have to jump through just to get a game on, not least the financial obstacle, but, you know, all the testing, the logistics, you know, I don't know how it works at a club that normally would have an overnight stay and train in the morning. You know, all of that stuff is out of the window. Yet the league has continued, and the owners of clubs who have had to, you know, carry the financial can for all of this over the last 12 months, you know, you absolutely have to take your hat off to them. And what it has done, I guess, is just create a little opportunity for the community trusts to have this limelight for 12 months because fans haven't been in, because there's been so many issues to deal with. It has raised the platform of the work that clubs do in the community. And again, the way that the clubs have supported that again, the owners, the players, the fans. I mean, let's just talk for a second, if we can, about AFC Wimbledon and their project where, you know, they've mobilised an army of 2,000 volunteers to help the local effort, which is just astonishing. Wow. Yeah, so people are missing the football on a Saturday, but they're getting involved in other ways. And I think that's probably the strongest example of that we've had this year. But again, it's been replicated at other clubs, but maybe just not on that scale.
For those that are listening and do want to try and get involved, try and help in some capacity, what can they do?
I think in the first instance, check out your club website, find the community page. Most community trusts have their own separate website with all their projects listed and ways to get involved. So you'll probably find a link through to that. Donations will be a fantastic way to support your community scheme. But, you know, if you've got a particular skill, which might be the ability to deliver food parcels, or maybe you've got some professional skills around marketing or accounting, or anything that might help the scheme, they're always looking for volunteers to help them in many, many different ways. So I think website's probably the best place to start.
Yeah, there's also a hashtag if you are doing any social media. The hashtag is EFL Day of Action. That's EFL Day of Action. Mike, lovely to talk. Keep up the great work.
Okay, great to speak to you, Clem. All the best.
Cheers. And once again, the EFL's Day of Action is next Wednesday, the 14th of April, and we'll have a special edition of the official EFL podcast highlighting some of the truly brilliant work EFL clubs do for their local communities in the very near future.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Let's wrap up this episode of the official EFL podcast with a catch up with one of our pundits earlier in the season last month. Nigel Adkins returned to management with Charlton Athletic. Come on then, take us through the sort of call you got, because it came pretty much out of the blue, didn't it, Nigel?
Totally out of the blue, unexpected. I just got a phone call from Charlton Athletic just to say, you know, how you doing? Would you be interested in speaking to the owner? I said, fine, yeah, I'll speak to him. So over Zoom, we had a Zoom call. I had a conversation with Thomas when he was out in America. And then the next day I got offered the job. So, and then it was right, okay, let's get it on. So obviously Leeds moved on to Birmingham. So things had to move quickly and that's what happened. And I'm delighted that I'm back in and, you know, delighted. It's a real privilege to join Charlton Athletic. You know, the history of the football club, the great fan base. You know, they've gone through loads of trials and tribulations. Great to have got promoted recently. Unfortunate to get, you know, relegated on the last game of the season. But for me, the new owner's come in, Thomas. He sold me the vision of where he wants to go. The long-term vision is obviously back to the Premier League. And we all know that's not going to happen overnight. But it's really exciting to be a part of the start of that journey.
Yeah, this is Thomas Sandgaard, who is a US-based Danish businessman. I mean, 2 years nearly out. It always feels like it's a hell of a gear change to go from all the other things we do in life to suddenly being chucked straight back into the cut and thrust of football. Has it been like that?
It has been a whirlwind. Obviously, you know, I've got a little bit of a journey to get into the training ground. But I normally get up first thing in the morning anyway. I think people are aware of that with the little morning videos that are put out. But I like to get up early, part of my morning routine. It's just great being on the training ground and around football players again and staff. The interesting thing is obviously, having been out, we've not been able to go to games. And obviously with the COVID situation that affected the whole of the world, We've like kept ourselves to ourselves, which is very important. And all of a sudden now I'm surrounded by people. So I'm very mindful that the physical distances have to be right. And we've got to keep the protocols right. Because the last thing we want to do, we're starting to see the end of this horrible situation that we've all been faced in, is to put ourselves in a situation that can just exacerbate it. So, you know, I'm mindful of that. But it's great just to be back involved in, you know, the day-to-day banter of football and trying to help everybody just make the best of the day.
Yeah. It must be like first day at school, is it, when you set off for that first full day to meet the players and stuff? A mixture of nerves but excitement. You're sort of searching under the bed to find a proper pair of shoes and, you know, have I got a clean suit and all that kind of stuff. I mean, is it that kind of situation like it would be for a little kiddie going off to primary school for the first time?
Do you know what, Clem? You're spot on. It's exactly that. You know, you think, right, you're going to start the next morning. As I say, it happened very, very quickly. And I was like, all right, what am I going to wear? What have I got? You know, he's going. I actually had his one for you. I hadn't had a pair of football boots on for a long time. So I'd actually found, I had a brand new pair of Copas. I actually soaked them in water and sat in the garden with my boots on, just trying to break them in a little bit, just so I've actually wore a pair of boots. So silly little thing like that. And then when we bring it forward, obviously we've played Wimbledon on the first game. There's been no need to have a proper pair of shoes on. You know, like everybody, you're staying from home and you go walking, or you've got your pumps on, or your flip-flops around the house and all sorts of things like that, or out in the garden. So I've actually got my shoes, I put my shoes on. And the first game, I can feel my, there was like shoes that I've worn before, so it's not as if they were brand new. I could actually feel them rubbing on the back of my heels as if, oh, I'm getting a blister here, I've got to be careful. So again, just small little stupid things like that, just getting back into the routine of the football managers. And as you rightly say, I mean, I've got a device that tracks different things, and you can see straight away the strain that comes on being a football manager and all the things that go with it, the people you've got to speak to. It's a lot, and you can just see from where I was in the lifestyle, obviously it's quite high, so I've got to make sure that I'm looking after myself so I can be the best I can be in this situation.
How does Nigel Adkins, who ummed and ahed about leaving Hull City in the summer of 2019, differ from Nigel Adkins going back in with Charlton Athletic in March of 2021?
Well, Nigel Adkins is still Nigel Adkins. You know, I'm still the same person. I still like to think I'm enthusiastic and passionate about everything I do. We talked about it, I didn't want to leave Hull City at the time, but I made the decision. But what we've gone and done is utilise this time that we've been out in a productive way. Obviously, COVID's affected everybody. I would have liked to have done a little bit more, and probably I would have taken a job earlier. But from my point of view, always learning. You know, we've been able to, there's a lot of real good people out there being able to speak to and listen to and engage with. You know, what does a high performance team look like? How can you develop people? What's the latest sports science? You know, the latest trends in football. So utilising the time. It's not as if I've just sat on my hands and not done anything. We've utilised the time. So just keep improving ourselves so that when we are put into this situation now, we are aware of the latest trends. We are abreast of how we can try, you know, develop a team, develop individuals, help individuals. We've done a lot of charity work as well, which I think, especially through COVID, has been invaluable for so many people to help them get through, because it's been tough. Let's face it, it's been tough for everybody. But the footballing family has been like gathering around each other to help each other get through this situation. And I think that's a real positive thing, that through the adversity of the life that we've all found, that a lot of people have tried to help each other, which is great.
What is the initial process then? How do you go about that first sort of week, or does it take longer than that to assess where you are?
Importantly, Clem, you go in, as I said at the very beginning of the interview, I didn't know anybody except for Chrissy Gunter. So establishing one-on-one relationships with everybody and actually giving time to somebody to sit and listen to them, ask some questions and then listen is important. So the one-on-one conversations with every single player and then with the members of staff as well is important to establish where people are at this moment in time. We've got a lot of players out of contract. So again, trying to establish who's out of contract, who's in contract, who's on loan, who's out on loan. You know, where are these likely to go and go? Where's our recruitment strategy from that point of view? And then our principles of play, being on the football ground, is kind of like, you know, the players go, right, who's this new manager? We don't know him. What's he going to go and do? How's that going to impact me? So trying to bring everybody together and say, right, okay, these are some of the principles in play. You know, how you start the game, the restarts, defense, offense, transition, game management. It doesn't matter who you play, and these are sort of some of the principles we're looking for. And then from that point of view, being on the grass and just implementing, you can't do it all in one go because you'll just, you know, you can have information overload, and it's just gradually just implementing a few basic principles of how we want to play in and out of possession as an example, and trying to establish what the strengths are of the individuals that we've got and the strengths of the team. You know, are we an athletic team? Have we got loads of counter-attacking ability? Or haven't we got that mobility? Have we got to sit a little bit deeper, soak up the pressure? You know, are we a good passing side? So many different aspects you've got to look at. First and foremost, what are we good at? What do we want to go and imply? What are our principles? And that doesn't come overnight. It takes time, it takes repetition, it takes understanding. The players and the staff, they've all established, I ask them lots of questions. You know, why? What's the reason we're doing something? What's the purpose? So again, by doing that, you start to gain an understanding of, do the players understand where we're going and what we're doing? Are they taking on? Because everybody's different and we all learn in a different way. We all take information on in a different way. You know, speaking, doing, watching. I've established very quickly there's some really, really, really good people at Charlton Athletic. And in so many different positions and roles. And it's how we can just galvanise everybody to be together. It's, you know, we're always going to get judged on a football result. You know, if you win a game, you're okay. If you lose a game, the manager's going to get dog's abuse. We understand that. But forget the result. It's bigger than that. It's the whole organisation. It's the whole community. It's all of us just trying to be the best and be supportive of each other.
You must have satisfied yourself, because you have turned down lots of opportunities, but you must have satisfied yourself that you are in bed with an owner that has medium to long-term aspirations, and that after all the passing from pillar to post with different owners over the last couple of years and all the controversy, that it is going to take time to lay that base for sustained long-term success, Nigel.
Yeah, well, maybe rephrasing being in bed with the owner, because obviously I'm coming up to being married for 35 years now, so maybe rephrasing that a little bit.
Okay, you know what I mean.
You know what I mean. But yeah, it's exciting. Obviously, I've got to build a relationship with the new owner, Thomas. You know, he's really passionate. He's new to football from that point of view of owning a football club, and obviously he's got a lot of other things going on. But, you know, if I can help with the experiences I've had with him being in football, working with different owners, being at different football clubs, just to help, you know, keep developing that relationship to keep moving forward. But it is exciting. As I said, listen, I've managed two teams in the Premier League. That's the pinnacle, if you like. From, you know, a manager's point of view, you want to be back in the Premier League. But for me, I'm looking at the big picture of how exciting it is that at the infancy of a new ownership, we've got somewhere we want to get to. Now, there's a good chance I won't be there when that's achieved down the line, because we all know what football is. But it's a great privilege to be part of helping to build and drive towards that situation. And again, good, clear communication will help. Having honest conversation will help. And living within the boundaries that you've got is going to be important as well. Because as I said, you can't just do it straight away, but we're building towards something which is exciting. And there's a belonging for everybody to be part of this journey that we're now going to go and be on. And I'm really excited to be part of it.
Great to have you back, Nigel. Just before we go, do we need to organise a set of shoe lasts for you? You know, the shoe stretchers, the little wooden blocks you can put inside a pair of shoes or a pair of boots? Do we need to get...
My shoes are great, but do you know what you do? I have my football boots on, right? So what you do, you just old school, right? I mean, they're probably different now. I had a pair of Adidas Copas, right? So I always like wearing them from a point of view. And soak them in water, put your feet on them, walk around them, this, that and the other. And then when you take your feet, stuff them full of newspaper. That's the old school, just to try and stretch it a little bit more. So happy days, eh? All the small little things that make you smile.
You've made me smile. Good luck, Nige.
All the best, Clem. Good to speak to you.
That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Nigel Adkins, Mike Evans and Robbie Earnshaw. If you enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast at EFL.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.